Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream Podcast,
where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media.
I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the New Mainstream Podcast. I'm Mario Carrasco, your host. Today, we have awesome guests joining us. She's the Global Director of Research Services at Qualtrics. Looking forward to her insights on leadership, marketing. Going to talk about Singapore. You're traveling right now. Please give a warm welcome to Ali Enriquez. How are you doing?
I'm great. Excited to be here. Thanks, Mario.
So we were talking about Singapore. Are you in Singapore now or where are you now?
No, I just got off of a plane from Singapore. Okay. I'm in Sydney. I've arrived in Sydney, spending the rest of the week here. Yeah.
Awesome. So what are you doing? Are you visiting global offices? Like what's the...
Yeah, spot on. Visiting global offices, spending time with team members I haven't met or been able to spend much time with in person, visiting some clients and taking in the local goods.
Awesome. So I want to get into more about your role. And we met, you're, I think, the newest member of the SampleCom board, which we're so excited to have you. And Qualtrics, just, you know, an amazing company in terms of what it represents for market research. But we talked a little bit about your career journey before diving into what you do now. Like, how did you get there? Did you know you wanted to do market research since forever? Are you one of those rare people?
Or... You did. That feels like a leading question, Mario. that is me.
Really? That was a total, like, that's a no. Super rarity.
Oh, is it? I love it. So as I think, I joke because as I interview candidates to join our team, it doesn't matter how junior or tenured they are. I'm looking for the moment they fell in love. I really do believe that you have to harbor a passion for research and insights. And even deeper than that, right? It can be anthropological, right? It can be just a desire to understand humans and our connections to people, products, and things. And so I am that one you describe. I fell in love with market research in college. I took a intro to quant course. And that kind of evolved to just an advertising effectiveness course. And I was torn. I wanted to be in marketing and I was a comms major, but I also really enjoyed math and stats and how can I bridge these worlds? And there it was right in front of me. So I did fall in love, followed one of my TAs to my first gig out of school, and the rest is history. So yeah, I have a passion for market research, and I look for that in all the team members we bring into Qualtrics.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I didn't know about market research till later on in my career, but I think you hit on about, I've just always been curious about human nature, and I think that's what drives a lot of us. I mean, and it's so cool. I love hearing that you're one of the, it's actually rare, at least people in the podcast, and I think people I meet in the industry in general, most people kind of fall into it after doing something else. It's pretty cool that you're like, that's what you knew out of college. So tell us more about your role. So you're flying to Singapore, Sydney, like, That's pretty awesome. What do you do in your role at Qualtrics?
It is very awesome, and I do not take that for granted. I run a division called Research Services, and it's pretty literally named, right? So we exist to help our clients. So we work exclusively with Qualtrics clients. So everybody that within our book of business has a Qualtrics account. And we are there as kind of extensions of their team. So my team of researchers and project managers and individuals who are scoping the projects are supporting their enablement and use of the Qualtrics platform. We are effectively an in-house research agency, is the simplest way to think about us. If you're familiar with Qualtrics, we've got a couple of different product pillars. There's one that's exclusively about the employee experience, one that's about the customer experience. And then there's this somewhat of a catch-all, but the one that speaks to me most is the MR pillar. So just market research, strategy and research in general. So that's the one that we most closely align to. And we, like I said, we're there to kind of do it for our clients. So we're writing the surveys, we're programming them, we're overseeing the data collection, reporting, analytics, dashboards, whatever the kind of scope requires.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, so I'm familiar with Qualtrics, obviously. I think first as a survey platform, then it's obviously much, much more than that. You have corporate clients and the research services, so that's great. And so I'm assuming that research services, it's global, right? It's not just US. You're running multi-country projects.
Yeah, it's wild. I'd say from a just kind of volume and even revenue perspective, the US is king, right? So just about 75-80% of our volumes, however you want to look at it, come domestically from the US. We've got an office in Dublin, and then the primary APJ office is here in Sydney, but we have satellites all over, you know, Japan, Singapore, even in parts of India. So my team specifically is spread between those core markets, Singapore, Sydney, Dublin, and then in the US, we've got offices in Provo, Utah, headquarters, and that's where I'm based, Chicago, and building an office in Mexico City as we speak. So lots of international travel, as you know, Mario.
Very cool. Yeah. So we launched, so we've been in Latin America for about 5 years, but we officially incorporated now in Mexico. So we have Think Now in Mexico, and I've been going to Mexico City a lot. It's one of my favorite cities.
Isn't it beautiful? I know we were gushing on Singapore, but man, they have a lot in common, right? Just the diversity, the just overall vibe, energy. It's amazing. I've gotten to know Mexico City quite well. Absolutely love it.
Yeah. So I have my next question, but I want to talk a little bit about Singapore. I think we're talking about how, it's really kind of utopian, I don't know. Was this your first time there? Or?
Nope. It wasn't. Yeah. First time with Qualtrics though. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's like just diverse, the integration with nature, technologically advanced. It's cool. I wonder, so I don't think I've worked with anyone from Singapore. Like, do you find that the surroundings, that culture they're in, like, how does that affect their worldview in terms of work culture?
What a beautiful question. My leader there, her name is Wee Ching. As I was leaving yesterday evening, she asked, what was your biggest kind of surprise, right? With meeting the team here. There is such a pride in their profession that I really don't think I've seen or felt elsewhere. There's also just an understanding, I think, that in the office and among each other and even of their clients, that I find rare, because Singapore it's a relatively small place. And that helps, I think, our team there really connect with customers on a different level. Again, in a way that I can't with a client out of Minnesota, you know, or one, you know, out of Georgia. It's very different. I'm not from either of those places. So it was absolutely astonishing. As you said, like the city, the vibe itself, so much greenery, so lush, so humid. My skin absolutely loved it. But then the people, right? And it was fascinating out to dinner with them, just hearing all of their different nationalities, but how much they actually have in common, right? And then how the school system works. And I honestly believe that every nation should operate this way. You must learn two languages. English is the primary. And what else are you going to study, right? And so just interesting, you know, with some of our peers there, and as they're raising children and challenged with, you know, kind of relearning a lot of just basics of even how to write, you know, simplified Chinese and all of that. So absolutely fascinating.
I could tell, like, you know, because I was surprised that you kept our podcast appointment. Like, you're just getting off the plane, you're in the hotel. But I could tell that you were energized from your team. And I had a similar experience. I went to India in December of last year. So we have a team of about 15 out there. And I was going every other year before the pandemic, but I hadn't gone to since 2019. And so I went in December, first time in a while. We've grown, and just connecting with the team, it's so amazing, like that base time. And learning about their culture, having dinner, talking about their families. And to your point, right, like they all speak perfect English. Like, it's just, yeah, we should be learning more languages.
We absolutely should. Back to kind of understanding humans and what makes them tick, right? Part one, expand beyond English.
And so it sounds like the person that operates your Singapore office is female, which is awesome. Yeah. I mean, I think we've talked about this before, like, there's, you know, females are overrepresented in the market research industry and yet underrepresented in leadership. So it's good to hear, right? You have some, you know, female heading up Singapore, and of course you're in a leadership position. Just tell us a little bit about this, like some of the challenges or opportunities that you've had being a female leader in a space that typically doesn't have female leadership.
Yeah, it's such an important topic, and I know that we share a passion on this, Mario. The framing's interesting though, right? The insights category tends to be more balanced than just about any other industry I've worked. I didn't quite go through my full background, but I started in the cruise line industry. And that's another that is just, it's pretty well balanced, but to your point, and just about anywhere else, right? In the executive suites, it's pretty much all men. And that's really no different. I'd consider Qualtrics more, to your point earlier, it's a tech company, and, you know, and it's very predominantly sales and engineering. And in each of those functions, the leadership team is male. So I do feel a bit unique and privileged, right, within Qualtrics. And I put a lot of pressure on myself to make sure that I'm being that mentor, that coach, that resource for anybody on my team. Just because, frankly, I didn't have that coming up through my career. And might be too late now. You know, we're doing the best we can with what we've got. But I think often about the leadership shadows that each of us cast, and how many people are basking in, you know, absorbing and kind of the ones that are following our footsteps, and how leading by example, and of course the people that you surround yourself with, but the way you conduct meetings, and the way that you give people the floor, and you invite diverse perspectives and thoughts. And, you know, you mentioned Yi Qing. We had a really healthy conversation yesterday at lunch, and it was exactly on this topic about how there's nothing more terrifying to me than a room of people just nodding their heads and agreeing, right? We're doing something wrong, right? We're getting to the wrong answer, or we're moving too quickly to get to decision. I want the dissenter. I want the challenger. I don't care, you know, what their background is, or really, you know, where they come from. We cannot get comfortable surrounding ourselves with people who look, think, and act like us, because I think that's really the real danger. And that can happen in a fully female leadership team as well, right? So it's a really tricky topic.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting time to talk about this too, right? I mean, I think the nation is experiencing it is experiencing a backlash on diversity and inclusion. Like, and it's sad because I feel like as an industry, we have made a lot of progress. I think the insights industry, you know, is in general, I've been in other industries, pretty inclusive. I think the problem we have, it's a pretty niche industry. So it's kind of, and ironically, it does a poor job of marketing itself, right? Like as a place that you can, you can go to, but, in general, like once people are there, I think it's pretty inclusive, but I think there's a lot of initiatives happening to help the industry become more inclusive. I mean, what are your thoughts on this whole backlash? I mean, and how do you think we should deal with that as an industry?
Oh, it's terrifying, honestly. And to think, right, about my children, I have a boy and two girls, and just the world that they will be faced with when, you know, they're adults, and and in kind of, you know, decision-making positions like we are. So I really try to think that far into the future and what, you know, what kind of groundwork and foundation we need to lay now. The way that we talk in the household, everything I think sets them up for better success. But that's not really your question, right? It's now no, within.
That's within the four walls. That is a big part of it.
It is. But, you know, for the next, you know, few years, if you will, what can we control within kind of the four walls of our office spaces, right? And I mentioned a bit earlier about recruiting, and we have this opportunity right now in Mexico City to onboard the right talent for us in the future of our company. And we think really, really carefully about that and make sure that the people that we bring in are reflective of, embody those qualities that you're describing. And you know what I've found, I mean, back to kind of our topic on how different cultures operate and exist in this world, when we've got a pretty standard rubric that we ask most candidates, and I found that as I'm going through it and we touch on DEI topics with these candidates in Mexico City, many of them are confused because it's so much of the way we talk about diversity and inclusivity is new to us, newer to us in the States, and that's embarrassing. To the candidates there, it's just how we operate, right? And when I probe for examples, they almost seem, they're just confused. Like, why do you keep asking me about this? You know, this is just how we do. And, you know, and that's also kind of scary. So how much longer is it going to take for us to get to that kind of place of comfort where we don't think twice about inviting diverse perspectives to a discussion or making sure that we're being, you know, inclusive and equitable with our hiring practices and our, you know, promotion and performance committees. A lot of effort goes into kind of creating this balance and inviting this, you know, this future that we want for ourselves. And I hope, right, that by the time our kids are there, they're reaping the benefits of this, and maybe they're responding just like our friends in Mexico. Like, we just, you know, any topic's welcome, and we, you know, we talk about it and embrace it freely. And it's just sadly not like that right now for us.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Well, I'm sure you have. I was gonna say, I don't know if you've interviewed Gen Z. I'm sure you have. And like, I feel pretty optimistic that that's the road we're going down, right? Because they're asking me tough questions, right? As someone that I believe in DEI, and you know, asking me things that really no candidate has ever asked me, and it's awesome. So I feel pretty good about the new talent coming up.
I'm with you 1,000%. And then again, back to my kids, imagine how much more they're going to challenge, right? That's how it has to happen, right? Yeah, you're spot on. I'm willing to bet on them, and I have so much faith in what they will do to push boundaries on how we adopt and adapt and make sure that we're being as, you know, equitable as possible.
Yeah. And also, like, one thing I was, you know, in this conversation reminded me, so I was at a conference, I was at the CEO summit for Market Research Association or Insights Association last week. And talking about DE&I, you know, I think obviously on a personal level and ethically, I think it's the right thing to do, but I was reflecting on it from a CEO perspective, and, you know, full transparency, like, the CEO summit's getting better, but it's not diverse. And so talking about this in front of everybody, I realized how really it's a existential imperative for us as an industry, right? It's not about, oh, this is what we should do and putting these policies, while yes, I believe it's what we should do, I feel like in order for market research industry to keep on existing and be like, we are tasked with reflecting the opinions of a diverse nation, one, also like increasingly a global economy, like if you're not diverse, you're gonna be left behind. So I try to also position it as a business imperative, right? It's a competitive edge.
So, you know, I'm smiling not because I love I love, you know, how much work we have to do here, but there's some irony in just the fact that market researchers work so hard and they actually pay out the nose to make sure they're being as representative with their study populations as possible. But why aren't we doing that within, again, our own four walls? That's
baffling, right? I'm going to spend $100 per response to make sure I get that perspective into my study. But that perspective is likely not being represented in the business decisions that we're making and, you know, the strategic direction of, you know, fill in the blank, whatever the company's kind of mission is. So, yeah, you're right. And the other thing, too, that I've been talking to my team a lot about as we embrace this very machine-powered future, right? Avoiding choosing towards AI. But I also hypothesize that the traditional market researcher is kind of old school, right? You can exist your entire career, which might be 30 plus years, almost in the same level. It's a relatively stable position, you know. And I worry too, because there isn't much kind of progressive thinking in that, typically in that type of persona. And so I love what you said earlier, bringing in, I'm willing to bet on the Gen Z client too. They're the ones that are going to see this future that I envision for not only Qualtrics, but the market research space. And they're going to take us there. They're going to push their company and their executives to buy into this future. It will be my hypothesis that, you know, research lifer who's just, you know, still printing out their banners and highlighting, you know, the points of interest. So I think there's something there too.
Yeah. And that's, so I think it's a good segue. I know you don't want to talk about AI, but given, let's just say innovation, like what is the future? What is the future of market research with all of these advancements? And I'll tell you, like, that was the number one topic at this CEO summit was AI. And I can share on a high level. I'm not supposed to share the exact conversations, but I could say, I think I'm allowed to say, no one really knows what they're doing. like it's just like, right, talking to other seat. I don't know. I mean, yes, I if it's a consensus, then it's not a secret, but it's just like, you know, even the only companies that know what they're doing are AI companies. And even then I was talking to like CEOs of AI companies, and it's like they're figuring it out. What's the future? Like, what's the future of market research? I mean, and you're in services, which has the potential to be the most impacted, like
100%. And yeah. And I'm so okay with that, right? So so here's my that. Take. I think
I like that take.
Yeah. Here's why. Yes, it's astonishing how quickly this technology has become mainstream, right? Ask any student today. I can't write a paper. I can't digest, you know, a school topic without, you know, ChatGPT.
Are you using it, by the way?
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. My teams. Yeah. I mean, make this headline better. You know, tell me more about what are clients in this kind of industry category space worried about, and what's going on? Help me prepare for a pre-sales call. You know, oh, it's glorious, right? But it's not job threatening yet, right? Right now it's job enhancing. And so what's the future? In my opinion, it will be our ability to ask less and intuit more. That's really it in short. I've said maybe an unpopular belief and probably even revenue compromising, but I think researchers are irresponsible. We're irresponsible with our budget, with our studies. We cram 75 questions into a 25-minute long survey because why? we don't really know what we're asking and what business decision we need to take on the back end of it. I think AI will first improve that whole process and reduce that waste. It will help us get to nuggets faster, and then we can be much more responsible with our budget. So my team's not going anywhere anytime soon. There will always be a future for custom market research. But what we'll see is an unlock of budget, because we're able to answer so many questions with just the wealth of information we're sitting on right now. Qualtrics collect, and my team collects 15 million responses a year across 12,000 projects. That's bonkers, right? So what can we learn from that to help clients, you know, scratch some of their, you know, initial curiosities off the list, and then really go deep on topics that matter to get to decisions faster. Over time, it will absolutely, I believe, start to create job risk and threat. But right now, the opportunity is to improve all of those human-powered, human-dependent processes, quality control, and, you know, quality control. Let's leave it at that, right? I mean, because we're human. We make mistakes.
Talking about like just like things that is in market research 101, like in college, like doing your desk research first. I don't think researchers do that. They're just like, and also I don't think they do that. And two, like there's so much churn in insights that someone commissioned a project 2 years ago, and then that person leaves, goes to another company, gets a promotion. They do the same, you know, it never was open. They do the same research. Like AI has the ability to tap into all those insights. So I 100%, love that.
100%. We actually are, we have launching something this year for that very reason, right? Like you've probably already asked this, or somebody in your company's already asked this a dozen times. Go and use that first, right? And preserve your budget for something more important. So yes, spot on, totally agree.
So then I'm just curious what your thoughts are on synthetic data. Like, is that something you've thought about? Because that's like the other side, right? You're talking about client and researcher side. What about the respondent side? Like,
synthetic responses panel. I wish I knew more. My gut and what I understand even from our own kind of, you know, ML teams in-house is that it really depends on, I'll call it the root data, right? What is this based on? And full circle, Mara, to the topics that we're, you know, we're diversity and inclusivity and all of these topics, I'm really concerned. I mean, think about facial recognition and how much data we had to work with there, and how it's kind of failed a large proportion of the global faces, right? I think the same kind of risk could exist here in synthetic responses and trying to predict, right, what a subset of any kind of population would think or how they'd react. So my confidence on that one is a bit further out. Will it happen? 100%. Yes, there will come a day where Coca-Cola can pop an ad into a tool and say, is this going to land in Saudi Arabia? And it's going to say, yep, you're good, beautiful, maybe make this tweak, you know. That will happen. I'm not doubting that, but right now I worry about this root data and the validity of it, the confidence we have in it. And I don't know what that is, and I don't know where it comes from, and it depends, you know, company to company. So it'll come for sure, no doubt, but I don't think, to my knowledge, and I'd happy to be proven wrong, that anything exists today that has that kind of degree of confidence that we need to feel good about the output.
No, you're right, it doesn't. And but I think I also think, I mean, and this is stuff we're tackling right in as an industry and at SampleCon, but just the fact that we're dealing with rampant data quality issues is kind of pushing a solution, right, to something that to something that we could solve as an industry, but now we're letting AI potentially take some of that market share away, you know?
But that's exactly right. It's certainly going to be a threat to this space. And as if the space isn't being threatened enough as it is right now, right? So confidence in decision making when how many of your responses were some form of bot or fraud or even just bad actor is also in the balance, right? So yeah. Spot on. Totally agree.
Well, it's, you know, believe it or not, we're almost at our time, and I know you just, you know, probably looking forward to resting. So you're in Australia now? Are you in Sydney?
I'm in Australia. I'm in Sydney. There's no rest, Mario. I'm going straight into the office. I've got a day of one-on-ones. The team's put together a happy hour this afternoon.
Okay, so what time is it over there?
It is, well, my laptop's mountain time. Like, that's fun. It's 9:34 a.m.
Oh, wow. Okay. So then after Australia, where is it, home? Or do
back home. Yes, yes. Yep. Okay. I'll head back home this weekend. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, so thank you so much. It was amazing to talk to you. Looking forward to seeing you, March.
Hang out. Just a couple more weeks, few more weeks at least. Yeah,
yeah,
can't wait.
Yeah. If people want to connect with you, what's the best way? LinkedIn?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, please do. Yeah, that's probably best. Let's do that.
Okay, awesome.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform.